Kay Bryant is a voice you hear at wake-up call early in the morning, and you were in the process of telling us about the great legendary fight.
Well, it was great and legendary to me. I don't even know if anybody else was around. We were having one of our little flaps on wake-up call, and we needed someone to come in because Bernard wasn't going to be there. And, of course, that would fall on Samori's shoulders. And whatever it was I was supposed to do, I was sort of, not standing up, not holding up my end. And Samori called me out on it. And it's the only time I've ever been angry with him. I was, rather than he and I both dealing with what the actual issue was, we were going at each other. And it came to both of us that he brought it up. He said, he looked at me and he said, "My sister," he said, "I'm not mad at you now and I never will be." He said, "But you got to understand that when you do these things, your actions have consequences." And just remember that, because he was tired and he didn't want to come in. And I know I have fought with other people about putting things on Samori, you know, and having him carry the weight. And here it was, I was doing it and he called me out on it. And I never had another cross word with him after that. I don't know what to do either. I'm not as eloquent with my feelings as Jabel, but I just feel so adrift just to see without the thought of knowing that he's not going to be standing at that door. I just don't believe it. And I'm just so, so glad that I got to meet him. I just can't, you know, I just cherish the years that I've known him. Since 1995, I feel so fortunate to have met Samori Marksman and to have had him in my life.
Thank you. Brother Shine.
I've said several times that Bernard brought me to the station, but Samori kept me here. I'm where Jabel is. My commander as well, and he taught me a lot about leadership. And I was sitting back here laughing about Janice, what she was saying, because Samori expected you to do well. You know, I remember one show. Janice said, "Why did he put me here? You know, I'm not sure." And I said, "Well, that's Samori. He wouldn't
have put you here if he didn't think you could do it."
Yeah,
it's as simple as that. So.
And when I get in trouble, that was the one who used to watch my back against management. The first time I got in trouble for bringing a bunch of high school kids in. And Valerie went ballistic because she was worried about insurance and a whole bunch of other stuff. And Samori called me in his office and he said, "What school they come from?" And he said, "Well, yeah, she was right, but find out a way you can bring the kids back in, not so many at the same time." He believed in working with the youth. That was no problem for him. And if he couldn't do it, he believed in other people doing it. But I wanted to quickly say about fighting with Samori. That was regular. One of the things that I laugh about, there's a person who will go nameless, but he comes into about once, twice a year, I think. He used to come into, whenever he got too arrogant or full of himself, he would come in and want to go into Samori's office and argue with him. And I felt like, well, he's going in there to get smacked around for a little while and come back to the ground, because Samori just, he could let you know that he knew a lot. He had a lot of information and he had a lot of power. But that didn't, he didn't look down, he talked to you. So that was important, as well as the fact that when we talk about leadership and people that can lead other leaders, because we're not talking about just Samari just dealing with a bunch of followers and people who are natural followers, and I'm not saying anything is wrong with that, but I'm talking about people who naturally lead. You know, Samari can have five leaders in the office and be able to negotiate that. And I think almost all of us here at one time or another have said, oh, Samari got you too? You know, that was regular. You know, that was a regular. That was, you know, so, and the one thing that, the last thing I want to say about it is I came, when I found out this, because I didn't find out until this afternoon, and the thing about it was, what Samari instilled in me was planning the next step. The first thing that came to mind, I said, oh, hell, what is going to happen to the station? Oh, hell, we got a program Thursday. Oh, hell. You know, but this is what I got from working with Samari. You know, he's taught me how to be able to really analyze what the situation is and where to go for the next step, or start to think about the next step. So, that's my brother, and he goes into my council now. You know, I have a council that in my head that I go to from time to time when I need information and I need suggestions, and Samori will be in my head. You know, that's my man. That's my brother, and I know I aggravated him sometimes by always knocking on the door, Samori, you know, and walking into his office, but he helped me with that, and that's my brother. Still is my brother, too.
Thank you, Brother Shine. Well, joining us from Namibia is perhaps the person who knows Samori. The word brother really is no euphemism here. It is very real. His name is Alumbe Breath. He is a voice, along with Daya Lomax, of Africa Kaleidoscope here at WBAI. Alumbe, are you there?
How you doing?
Okay.
Well, I know how you doing. How we all doing?
I know.
You know, it's ironic that today we were talking about Samori here. I was talking with the Prime Minister before he got the call, and that I was showing him the, it's like a game, a copy of COVID Action, with the interview that we had did with President Laurent Kabila in November. As you know, the Namibian government is very much involved in the struggle in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. But even so, the first day I got here, and I started to ride around and see the progress that was coming. I thought, when I come back, the first thing I'm going to do is go to Samori's office and tell him, you got to come out of that office and come over here and see, you know, some of the work that we have done, because he hadn't had a chance to come over here. And I said that, you know, he hadn't had a chance really to travel too much. I think he just made one trip to London, I think, last year. And I really had said that he's got to come just and take a look, because most of the people here in the government know him. Even this one minister who looks just like Lambert, his brother. You know, we was always kidding about that. And later on, I was on the road. We was going with a special advisor to the Prime Minister, going to some locations to see some other work that was being done and some that had to be done. When we got a call on a cellular phone from the Prime Minister, Hage Geingob, saying that he wanted us to come back, that some very bad news had come about. So I didn't know what it was, and we came back and went back to the office of the Prime Minister and went upstairs, and they put me into the other, you know, the room. I was in there by myself. We just left out of there in such a jovial manner. And then they came and said, we had some very bad news that the mission had called and said that Brother Samori had passed away that morning. And I was, you know, it was just devastating. You know, so he had already had, the Prime Minister had already felt, you know, what that had meant, because we had done so much work together in the States, but there was still in the liberation struggle, in representing SWAPO. And, people have, I know that, Latrice, that you've been letting the people, hear, voices on Samori, but sometimes even too hard to articulate what he really meant to the station, particularly the local station, WBAI. And just the recent, power play that took away, the independence of the local boards and let everything go to national. This struggle that Samori has been fighting, for the proper type of broadcasting will allow people from various nations and struggles throughout the world. It's not just a question that he just dealt with the struggle of Africans, in the diaspora as well as on the continent, and that he was very articulate on the Caribbean struggle. But Samori, allowed for programming to share from the most remote corners of the world, where people had an opportunity to express themselves and their struggles. Now, everybody doesn't always agree with them. They don't agree with, nobody agrees with everybody 100% of the time. And, he had a share of people who would try to find reasons to criticize. But the thing is, they were criticizing was stuff they heard on the radio. It was an opportunity for them to actually engage, discussions about people who are living lives that have nothing but struggle and just, subsistence, existence and dying, some by the incremental stage and one or two, or person, something like what happened with Amadou Diallo, or something like what happens with Rwanda, or Congo. And it's important when you listen to the other stations, and even to bring in, the talkback format to the way we you're on there, to be able to engage people in conversation and learning experiences and to have exchange of ideas. And some of us, like, who have, done talk before, want to have an opportunity now to allow what little time we have for people who we'd like to share with, the audience. Let them hear people that they might have gotten, an opportunity to hear before. All of this comes about because of what Samori has instituted as a station, so that everybody knows that. I mean, whether the government, or the opposition, the other opposition, or even the people who depend as freedom fighters to get their message across. So I don't think that we really have been able to feel the impact of the loss of Samori Marksman at such a young, early age. And one of the things that bothered me, because I could detect, knowing him for a long time and his attitudes and, and having different discussions and even debates sometimes, I could tell, when he was, under some stress. And, a lot of times if he gets into a discussion that's heavily argumentative, it would be heavy in argument, I would then, say, hey, man, this would be cool, because, he's got a history. Something that, that makes you very vulnerable and we really need you. And to see that that day has come at a time when there's so much in the world now that needs a firm program director that understands these dynamics and can actually see that the word gets out. It's really a hurting experience. As soon as I got back from the Prime Minister's office, I came in, I called home and then called Rita to express my condolences. And, it was just something that you really can't describe because it was real. As she said, Samori is gone, And it was not something that we, some of the people had talked about, we don't need Samori dropping, just passing away from us like that. This time, it was not, a question. It was not speculative. It was actually, this had happened. And I think that even now, as we discuss and try to, reminisce and try, to make believe that it's not a hurting thing, that everybody knows that when they hear say that they can't, it's the only way to say that we can't express the hurt. And in my case, anger, because as far as I'm concerned, this struggle, this internal struggle that we're not supposed to talk about, stressed out Samoyed. Stressed him out. You know, he should not be dead. He should not be dead.
Thank you, Larry.
Very true.
Thank you very much.
Very true.
Yeah.
And we'll see you when you come home.
Yeah, so they're making arrangements for me now. They said they know, I mean, I know how tight you were, so I know you have to curtail it. I had planned to leave Friday to get back at least by late Saturday, but they're making those special arrangements so I can leave tomorrow evening, which is Wednesday, and be back there by Thursday.
See you then. Thank you.
Carry on.
Thank you. And from Montreal, Anthony Sloan, former arts director, who joins us now.
Hello, Eutrice.
Hello, Anthony.
How are you holding up?
Well, you know.
I hear you.
The best we can.
Okay, well, Michael G is there to help out. There's so many things I could say about Samoyed, but I heard a little bit about of what Alambe was saying, and as you folks know, I try to be as light as possible, and this is a very heavy thing. Just before I came up here on Monday, and this last week, it was like Thursday, we had a meeting at Riverside Church. Basically, it was Grayson and Grayson Challenger, a maintenance engineer for our equipment, and Samori and myself, and the technical person from Riverside, and the media person from Riverside to get together on this 50th anniversary we're supposed to have in May. And it was going back to another Samori that I knew in the early 80s, when, in fact, when I used to record forums for Samori and Alambe, the political forums that we used to do, and that's how we started the Sound Gatherers, because I got a lot of people involved. In fact, that's how we met Grayson. Grayson came through the Sound Gatherers to do this. But after we had this little meeting planning on the Riverside event, we went up to the cafeteria, and talking to someone. We're talking about, good health and good food and, how to eat right and all of that. Just a regular, friendly conversation. And I guess a lot of times when someone's in a powerful position, I know we don't want to say, BAI and program director, but it is a powerful position in terms of the amount of stress that can be brought upon you. We see the person in one light. We forget their humanness. So I just want to just give you a slight little thing about Samori as the family man, as I've seen him, or as the relating to children as I've seen him. As many of you know, my niece, I hang out with my niece a lot. She's young, and she's been at the station since she was like 3 years old. And the last time, and she's 10 now, and the last time was about a year ago, a year and a half ago, was at the old space, and was in Samori's office, and she's just rolling around on a chair, just swinging around a chair. And Samori and I just having a normal conversation and letting her be a little girl. And when I think of Samori, I think that's the image that comes to mind. It's a person that takes care of business on a bunch of levels, but is still very, very human. I just had an interview with an author named Paula Woods. And when she finished with the interview, I introduced her to Samori. And Samori asked about her book. And I said, was it appropriate for children, for a teenager? And Paula Woods said, oh, sure, blah, blah, and explained it to her. And so he said, well, you think I can get a copy? I said, well, I'll give you. And I said, I'll give you my copy. Let her sign it here and give it to your daughter, who's a teenager. And I guess what I'm trying to, get through, because there's so many views I have of Samori from working with him and working for him and working, just hanging. I'm just saying this, like any person, or more than any person, Samori is such a multifaceted force, entity. And, missed is not even the word. It's like a force. It's just missing from the universe. I don't know. It's something that's going to be gone. And quite frankly, I don't know how we can, I don't know what's going to happen, how we're going to fare through these kind of waters. And I think that Lamba is very right, because we did talk about the, at our luncheon at the Riverside, we did talk about the situation with Pacifica. And, you know, but that's, I don't want to, well, that's it. I'm sort of like, I can't even come home at this particular point. You know, I'm stuck here, but I have this work that I'm doing here, and I can't leave. But, you know, my heart and my thought and my strength goes with Samori's family and with the WBAI family and, indeed, with the Pacifica family. Thank you for this time, and I'm sure we all thank Samori for his time on this realm, on this earth.
Thank you, Anthony. Here is a selection dedicated to Samori and his family by Matthew Finch, our current arts director.
Aprender a querer como el
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. I'm Utrecht Lead, and this is a very special program today. We are mourning the loss of our great and esteemed friend and colleague, and as Jabel, our colleague, just said, our great leader and commander here, Sir Maury Marksman, who died this morning. And that was a gift of music, replaying his favorite music, and the different folks here offering the music they know Sir Maury liked. That was Guarda Barranco, and it was titled Vale Más, It's Worth More. Our current arts director, Matthew Finch, is joining us now, and your words today, Matthew.
Well, first of all, you know, Sir Maury may have preferred a whole lot of different music to Guarda Barranco, but the sentiments in there, which is to say to spend one more moment with you is worth all the world, are very much what I'm feeling. You know, Sir Maury was a great big cat of a man, you know, and like a cat, sometimes he was hard to figure out. But also like a cat and like a mother cat, you know, he metaphorically wrapped his body around so many people at this station in a very, very protective way. And he was also always challenging to people, always knew exactly how to push a different personality, you know, to do better. Just in the last few hours, you know, I've gotten calls from some of the producers who are even now just finding out. Some of us have known about it. You've probably known since early this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I found out a little just before 10 o'clock. And it's this sort of wave effect, you know, and I sort of had a grip on what was happening. And I walked past one of our production studios, and there he was. There was his voice, and it was just like right back to the beginning. No podrás morir. The poem I was playing last night for the Mexican poet Jaime Sabines, and it's a poem about you can't die.
Yeah.
You cannot die. Sir Maury, you know, knew his area. He knew radio. He knew people. As people have said, he loved, and he became a four-year-old if you brought a young child into the room. There was something so ageless in him, and it could be woken up in a moment's notice. You know, even with all the pressures and burdens that he carried, that kid was always with him. It was always in him, and I think that made him. Intelligent, that made him so intelligent because he could still look at the world as a developing thing, even though he had all the information and intelligence to be a snob and to assume he knew the score, he knew everything, there was nothing left to learn. But no, I mean, he was, you know, deeply concerned about what was happening in Central Europe, deeply concerned with Africa, deeply concerned with Asia. I think very frustrated that we still did not have, you know, good enough information, good enough presence in these different parts of the world. And he was at home in the world, you know. 21st century man, Maury Marksman. He was at home in the world, no matter where he might be. You know, he related to people. He knew people. I mean, like I said this morning, you know, a great revolutionary is a person who's fired by love, and I think that describes him quite accurately. And we're not done with him. I don't think any of us will ever be done with him.
Thank you, Matthew. Those of you who listen to the In the wee hours of the morning, you hear the UFO desk and the voice of Paul Williams. And Paul, I know you too have been hard hit by this news.
Devastated. Maury Marksman was a friend of mine. I knew Samori from around 1980-1981. The man was a fine, upstanding man, a soldier. I met him back in the days when I was part of the Black United Front, and he came to check out the front, and I got involved with BAI, and he let me stick around. For a while, I was a loose cannon on the ship of BAI, and he let me stick around. He calmed me down. He helped me see things that were right in front of my face that I couldn't see. And he was always my friend. There were some tight times financially in the 80s, and Samori put together these conferences, which are still going on now, and asked me to help out. And was able to throw some coin. And it wasn't much, but it helped. And he didn't have to do that. The man was a straight-up man. I mean, he was a soldier, without a doubt. I heard, got the word this morning. I couldn't accept it, and I still can't accept it. I still expect to see him come walking down the halls. Last time I saw him, I think I was walking down the street from the subway towards the station there at 120 Wall. And we saw each other in the street. We gave each other a hug and a how you doing and goodbye and see you later. You know, it's like, you know, we all expect each other to be here forever. And in a way, maybe because I'm a UFO guy, I kind of feel that energy doesn't die. Yeah, I think Michio would agree. It takes energy to change energy. And the spirit, what we call the spirit of man or of woman or of humanity, that's energy. It just leaves the corporeal body, which we get really attached to and for good reason because it's our home for a while. But Samori's out there. I hope he's chilling and having a good time. Because the man worked like a dog. He really worked real hard for this place. He worked hard with everyone he worked with. And like all of us, he had his flaws, but by gum, he was a hell of a guy. Samori, we're going to miss you on this plane, bro. Maybe see you on the next. But I got to agree with Matthew. We ain't done with you yet, bud. We ain't done with you yet. You ain't out of here just yet, brother. We'll all miss you, man.
Thank you very much, Paul. Paul had mentioned these conferences, and our next speaker is a person who has appeared on such forums. Her name is Susan Ross. She is a psychologist and was on her way someplace when she heard the news and doubled back to say a few words.
Well, first I want to thank you, Therese, for and everybody who put together this space and time for people to come together, given who Samori was in this community, and I mean the BAI community and New York City progressive community. We needed this time. We really needed this time. I first met Samori actually in 1979 right here at the old station, BAI. I was doing Vietnam work at the time, and it was after the war had supposedly ended, 1979, and there was very little coverage and very little attention, and the United States was attacking Vietnam. China had just invaded Vietnam. And I called Samori and asked to be on, you know, to speak. I was working with the committee, and I'd never met him, didn't know him, and came to, and heard this very serious-sounding man on the phone, and he sounded very scholarly, and I came down and was quite amazed that this very, very handsome young man was greeting me at the radio station. He was extraordinarily handsome and young at the time, and very, very gracious. And our political and whatever relationship over the years developed starting then. And Samori had a way of, you know, everybody who's been called by Samori at the last minute to be on some program on the radio and some forum knows that Samori had a way of picking somebody out for a particular role or a particular topic, and he had me in various categories, and as something would come up on the subject, he would call me and say, could you be on, and could you do this, and could you do that. And the last category he's been calling me about, I was on a BAI forum just about 2 weeks ago, I guess, on it, was the rising fascism in his country. And Samori just called last Thursday night and asked me to be on Friday morning on the morning show with him. He was going to be discussing rising fascism. I was going to be en route. I couldn't do it. But we talked again, and he said, you know, I want you to talk about our common love, Wilhelm Reich. Wilhelm Reich, the progressive psychoanalyst of the 40s, who talked a lot about rising fascism in Germany. And other times, Samori would call and say, you know, what, remember our friend, our beloved Franz Fanon. And there was that kind of passion, and these people would be live and real and existing here today, you know, when Samori talked about them. And it was always a pleasure to participate. And he would call and ask me to do something. We'd be on the phone for an hour about some talking and arguing about something politically. In a minute, I'd be saying, did you hear what happened just last week? And he'd say, yeah, you know, and go on and on. Samori's people have been giving tributes to Samori. I've been hearing them for the last hour. They've been very, very moving. And I don't think I really understood fully who Samori was until I just heard a lot of the comments that were made. But it was always a pleasure, a very deep pleasure to speak to him. And, you know, just heard the comments from the brother about everybody has their flaws, and women would raise questions about Samori sexism and things like that. Everybody does. And I have to say, when I think back to the 20 years that I've known him, that he was extraordinarily affirming of women and their intellectual contributions. And I just felt that was, you know, as someone, I've been around in the movement for a long time, and I haven't experienced that many men intellectuals who had that kind of acknowledgement of women. I heard him talk about other women that way. I certainly felt he treated me that way. And it was very important, and I thought that even whatever the inner workings of the station were, which I'm not that familiar with, that I thought that was important, the way he, despite whatever lack of consciousness or weaknesses he had, or men in general had, that he was able to transcend that in certain ways and communicate that. I think he was very, very concerned in this last period about the rising fascism, not only in this city, which we've all been talking about day in and day out, but in this country. The fact that he responded to Clayton Jones' speech the way he has and has played it and tried to give that coverage, I think his knowledge, his historical knowledge, and his understanding the world situation gave it a particular breath. We sometimes use the word fascism and the phrase rising fascism casually. I think Samori looked at it very deeply. I remember being on a forum, actually, that Robert Knight was hosting about 4 years ago, and Paul Robeson Jr. was on it too. And it was one of those crazy, crazy forums with millions of contradictions, and I used the phrase at the time, rising fascism, and talked about the lessons of Germany, since I'm a product of World War II. And Paul Robeson jumped on me and said there's nothing like fascism in this country, and blah, 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 blah. You know, we argued about that. And Samori and I were just reminiscing about that exchange back then the other day, talking about how I remember being very concerned at that time. It was a forum on the cutbacks. And I thought the cutbacks were the beginning to lay the huge cutbacks in this country nationally and citywide, statewide, were beginning to lay the fascism, the groundwork for fascism, in the sense that people were being defined as expendable, large sectors of people. Anyway, Samori really was concerned about rising fascism in that way. The other thing I wanted to say, just thinking back, as soon as I heard that we had lost him on this planet, that I remember a forum he organized and gave in Brooklyn about maybe close to 10 years ago, when Archie Singham, the well-known Caribbean scholar, Archie Singham was very ill and had a stroke. And it was very, very difficult to understand him because his speech was so slurred. And Samori hosted this event, and Archie spoke, because Samori had great love and respect for Archie. And it was a wonderful thing to do that at a time like that. I think it was Archie lived less than a year afterwards, and when Archie actually did die, Samori did a tribute that was very moving. But that's his sense of respect for people and humanity and for elders and for those who have contributed was very profound. And as I heard of the loss of Samori today, I thought back on Archie Singham. Samori was a very, very, very beloved comrade. And I thank everyone at BAI who's obviously so profoundly moved for the respect and love people are showing him collectively and opening up the station to others to whom Samori was very cherished.
Thank you very much. The person who heads up our development department, in other words, the person who goes out and bangs on doors and sends out letters begging for support for this station, is also with us in studio. He's Greg Hedren, and he joins us now. Although he is relatively new to the WBAI family, he has come to know Samori quite well. Greg?
Thanks, Eutrice. I have just known Samori for under a year, but I've certainly learned to respect his intelligence and eloquence under different conditions, and also his wonderful sense of humor. Just yesterday he passed the hall in his typical gracious way and said, you know, "Hello, gentlemen," as Bernard and I were talking about something. I think that one of the things, you know, Latrice talks about the fundraising, but actually Samori is really the driving force behind the fund drives, which brings in the bulk of the funds in collaboration with all of the producers. The development efforts on my part are ancillary. But recently when we found out that there was a deficit, Samori immediately suggested that we have several one-day fund drives and that we also reintroduce the authors series, which both have been very successful. As the year progressed and the recent fund drive, we were in the room answering telephones, and it was getting out of hand, and Samori came there, and he was answering them just as fast as we were. And when they calmed down, I said, "Samori, how do you do it? I mean, you're here in the morning, you're here at night, you've got 1,000 books on the walls, you're reading dozens for each fund drive, and you spend time with your family." And he says, "I don't sleep." He says, "When I was in the military, I learned to get by with 4 hours of sleep. That's how I do it." But then he even said that when I do lie down, I'm always thinking of ideas. So I think the man never slept. He was just constantly on the run. His enthusiasm for news was also something that I guess stirred my attention one afternoon when he was listening very intently. And he said, "My God, that gives me an orgasm." And I sort of stopped and I turned to him. And he said, "Listen to that." And he went on about how the reporter discussed the context and the history and how everything was framed and that this was a very complex but clearly delivered a message. And after he mentioned his response, I thought, I'm going to listen a lot closer to the news now.
Yeah.
And on a sense of humor, just the other day, there was a woman who was talking about, she just interviewed Marcel Marceau. And Samori looked at her very sternly and said, "I don't know that we can use it. There's probably some problems with that interview." And her eyes began to widen, and she sort of turned to me, and she turned back, and she said, "Well, what's the problem?" And he said, "Well, I think there are going to be some problems with that." And she turned around again, and I said, "Marcel Marceau doesn't speak." And Samori, when she turned around, he just smiled. So I want to say that I certainly have enjoyed my time with Samori, and I will miss him as well.
Thank you. Earthwatch is a long-standing program here at WBAI, and the person who hosts it is a long-standing member of the WBAI family. His name is Robert Knight. Some words from you, Robert Knight.
Samori was always imitating me. He called his program World View. To know Somori, you got to understand that he was always trying something new. Whether it was about democratizing the air or a forum on Afro-Republicanism, Dr. Ross was mentioning. To understand Somori, it might help to imagine if Don King were ethical. Then you kind of have an inkling as to the energy that is Somori. From the earliest days when he was directing urban affairs, international affairs, program director, he always brought something new to the radio station. And what he brought that was new was always also principled. And as Matthew and I think others have noted, there was a playfulness about his brilliant mind. There was that childlike curiosity and ability, therefore, to be new in thought as well as in project. And yet, he also had the demeanor of the stern leader. He was a kid, and yet he was also wharf. If you crossed it, if you were not right. And he was fearsome, and there was nothing more fearsome to me about him than his intellect. And it scared me, because it meant I had to be right. We had to be right. You could not half step on research, on community connections, on information, on connectivity of issues. He made us all more intelligent that way. And he made us also culturally more intelligent and socially more intelligent, because there are few who have excelled the historic work that he has done in democratizing this radio, this network, this system, and this world. He made this radio station look and feel like New York. He was not ashamed of achieving majority culture, whether that meant people of color or people of femininity. He was secure enough that he could expand intellectually. He taught lessons to the network. He didn't take orders. He showed them how. And the people stood behind him and showed how, because this was the first community radio station to raise $1 million, and that was under the leadership and direction of Somori Marksman. Now, one thing that has to be said about Somori is that sometimes he was light on details. Sometimes he was light on details. He, like I said, Don King, big plan. And often he would leave, others to do the detail catch-up work. You know, here it is. He's due on at 5 o'clock, and we got to do an obituary at 4. That's typical Somori, man. Leaving us to do the work, but that is also the best blessing we have. Because if we can do the work he did, there can be no better than us.
The person often called upon to do the obituaries at 4 is our own David Sears from the newsroom.
Well, to me, I think Somori represented the epitome, the ideal of what the Pacifica Network was intended to do and what BAI has been across the years and continues to strive to be. I don't think that being WBAI is a steady state, anything that becomes and remains unchanging. Somori was part of the driving force that kept BAI on track to being what it's supposed to be. I don't think that anyone I've ever met projected so much authority, such depth of knowledge and insight into such a broad range of world situations and politics and the human sufferings that have taken place not only in Africa and Europe, but in every part of the world. He seemed to know about just about everything that was happening. He had this cynicism that goes along with spending your life delving into the kinds of political and human rights scandals and affairs that we have to, as journalists, delve into. And yet I was always amazed at the sort of childlike sparkle in his eyes when he would come across a new piece of information or see someone make a connection, and he'd light up like a Christmas tree. You could see it in his face, and he'd get this glow. Yesterday when he came into the newsroom and said, we should be broadcasting these city council hearings live, he was so enraptured with the idea that this is information that people should be hearing, and it was good information. It should be getting out there. Whether it was the stuff that we come to expect from the bureaucrats or the more insightful and perhaps heartfelt testimony of the people who have been suffering from some of the abuses that we've been covering so much in the news department. Samori was, I think, the ideal, the kind of person that you need to have in order to make a radio station like BAI and like the Pacifica Network a reality. I've spent a good part of the afternoon calling people all over the world. I spoke to Alambe Brath in Namibia, who had heard about Samori's death from the Prime Minister of Namibia, who was a friend of Samori's. I spoke to Tony Benn in London, who learned of Samori's death from me, and I also spoke to Howard Zinn, who I also told of Samori's death. Both of them had been on the phone with Samori within the last 48 hours. It seems that Samori talked to everybody in the world at least once a week, if not more often. And it shows. They all know him. They all remember him. He's had an impact on their lives, and they appreciate that he came to them and gave them the opportunity to express what they knew in more than just the soundbite, in more than just the pat phrase. They got the kind of forum that we're here to provide, and Samori knew the people to go to and knew how to speak to them in a way that got the best information. And I think that without Samori, we're going to have to really struggle, but we have to keep his model, his image in mind as a way to keep going and doing what we're here to do.
Thank you very much, David. Delphine Blue.
Well, Samori... Samori Marksman used to like to kid me a lot. He would give me a really hard time, but I hear him in my mind, Blue. He used to call me Blue. And, you know, it's sort of when someone passes, you seem to think about other deaths. My own father died when he was 53, and I was 17 at the time, and I didn't know what it meant to be 53. You know, I was 17. I had no concept. Samori was 51. And now I understand what it means to be a man in the prime of your life. He was such a vibrant man, and it's just a shock. A few years ago, I was interim arts director here. We were going through a transition, and I was interim arts director for about a year, and so I worked very closely with Samori, and he made me work harder practically than I think I've ever worked in my life. I didn't know what I was capable of. He really pushed me, and I remember during the fundraising drive, he wanted to do this 10-hour special, his dedication to Pete Seeger. And he kind of dropped the whole thing in my lap, as Robert Knight said. You know, he had this idea, and he didn't give me a lot of details, and I was really angry because it was a little bit, you know, chronologically ahead of my direct experience. And so I really had to work hard and research so much that I hadn't directly experienced. And, you know, when it was over, I couldn't believe that I had actually put this thing together. And it was because Samori pushed me so hard. You know, I was really angry at him at the time, but afterwards I was amazed at what I had done because of him. And this is a tremendous loss, and I'm really stunned. You know, I was away for a week, and I came back into town yesterday, and as we got into New York, we drove in and flipped on the dial, and Samori was on the air. And I had no idea that was the last time I was going to hear his voice live, you know, while he was alive. So anyway, I want to give everyone else a chance, but thanks for letting me have some time.
Thank you. We cannot get by a day in this station without all the technical pieces in place. And the person who Samori almost glorified every day for just keeping us on the air is Grayson Challenger. Grayson, it's good to see your face, because we usually see your legs protruding from under the console, fixing something or the other and rewiring this or fixing that. So some words from you, please.
Well, I want to basically thank everybody, the listeners, for the contributions, because I guess I wouldn't be able to do any of this if they didn't give us money to be viable in the world, so to speak. And I think that was one thing that Samori worked real hard to accomplish as well. Put a lot of effort into it. And I don't know how to say all this, but the last time I saw Samori was at Riverside Church, basically, where we met to discuss the 50th anniversary, which will occur at Riverside Church in the near future. And it was Samori Marksman, Anthony Sloan, and myself. And we met there last week. And it was kind of amazing to see Samori just negotiate his way through the various officials that represented the church in the pursuit of this objective, which of course is the 50th anniversary celebrations. And I would say it wasn't easy. And he also pointed out that he was supposed to be in California at the time, and that he was essentially standing in for someone else, because he shouldn't even be doing this thing, doing a site survey for this particular project. And we had lunch together, Samori, Anthony Sloan, and myself. And he sort of told me some of the things that were ongoing, some of his concerns at the station here, and one of which was the changing of the rules for the board that represents us and things like that, and the fact that there'll be no local representation or local input into this board, you know, based on its new structure, and that it was it was so important that this not remain this way, and it just see it as being antithetical to this whole concept of democracy and whatnot. And Samori was just phenomenal. And so we parted, and that was the last time I saw him. And then I woke up this morning, didn't listen to the station right away, and I tuned in just before a wake-up call. So I've ended their programming. And I sat up and listened to Democracy Now, and I actually thought I was recording it, but I forgot to remove the copy protect window that's on a DAT tape, so I didn't really get it. My machine went to record, and instead of like doing the slow, it has a fade up mode, and instead of going into that and then starting to record, because I walked out of the room and left it, it didn't do it. It just stopped, timed out after a certain interval. And so I listened to the whole of Democracy Now, and I noted that Amy's voice was somewhat subdued and far less effervescent than it usually is. And I thought, wow, she seemed to have gotten a lesson in calmness or something like that. You know, what's up here? So I noted that. And then at the very last, she said that Samori was dead. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. I screamed. I yelled. I shouted. I was concerned about my neighbors because they would hear me. But it's too much.
Thank you, Chris.
And it bothered me because I never told Samori that I really loved him. I appreciated what he did. He used to call me Donkey. He'd look at me, and he'd probably realize how much work I did. And he'd call me Donkey. Hey, man, look who we got here, Donkey. And it's another way of saying donkey, which is a beast of burden, basically. And I always thought to myself, but I'd never tell him, I'd say, yeah, look at who's talking, right? A donkey. But what about you? You're a bigger donkey than me. So, I don't know. And I wonder how it is that we permit a set of circumstances such as we are surrounded by to exist, such that Samori had to do so much with so little help from the quarters where it should have been coming from. It bothered me, and I have one question for all of us, because what has happened to Samori should be a lesson to us, and a lesson about the nature of our organization and the work we have to do. I always heard that in early European society, that the custom was to kill the bearer of bad news. So the person that came and said, the king is dead, they would kill him, and then deal with the fact that the king was dead, and the story was a relevant story, and they should act upon it. This is the culture and custom out of which we come. And in this society here, we don't have any blessings for pointing out the weaknesses in our society, America as a whole. You know, even though it is essential, because it's part of an effective feedback loop, because if you can't feel that the button of your typewriter has been pressed down and reached the end of its travel, you'll keep pressing it and you'll hurt your joints. And if you do this repeatedly, you will injure your body. And so there needs to be an effective feedback mechanism in our society that is unfettered by commercial and business interests. Mm-hmm. And even though our society needs this to be healthy, we don't get blessed for bringing them this bad news. We are cursed, and we are always struggling. So, my question is, who is the next Samori? Not in terms of his performance, but who will drop dead next in the face of this circumstance which we have to operate within with so little support and so much effort?
Thank you.
And we should do things to reduce, what you say, the demand that we put on each other and be gentler to ourselves and each other. I don't know how to achieve that. I don't have any answers, but this is like a dream sequence for me. And I thank you all for listening.
Thank you very much. Joining us now is John McDonough, who is with Radio Free Aaron. And if you listened just last week, St. Patty's Day, you know the work that they do. John, are you there?
Yeah, Eutrice. I just wanted to call in, too, with sympathy for the family, and that the Republican movement in Ireland has lost a friend. I'd say there's kids in the West Bank and West Belfast now who do not know Samori, but he gave them a station that they could have their voice on, that maybe in their own states that they were living in. that they couldn't get on their own radio stations, but they might not have known Samori, but the work he has done and all these far-off-flung places that he's never been to, and just by opening it up, and I have to tell you, our show in particular gave Samori a lot of grief. I would come up there on Saturday, and of course Samori would be there, and he said, John, can you come into the office? And I knew I'm in trouble. And you'd sit down there, and he'd throw up the letters about the show, and then there was faxes and the irate phone calls. But we knew at the end of the day, he was in our corner. We even had the FBI come up at times looking for tapes of the show. But Samori wouldn't give in to any of that. He just knew. He supported what we were doing. And there's just very few Samoris in the world. I knew no matter what we did, he was backing us, and that no matter what flack was coming in from whatever arena, Samori was there, and we didn't have to look over our shoulder in that direction about what was the program director going to say about all the flack we're getting in the newspapers or from the FBI or anything. I mean, you just even look at the case of Omi Abul-Jamal, where it became a big controversy with NPR, with the PBA calling, and they pull his voice off. Can anyone seriously at the station at WBAI ever think that that even crossed Samori's mind? I mean, you just knew he had your back. And, you know, he doesn't have it there now, you know. There's going to be a void, and I don't know how it's going to be filled.
Thank you, John. A person who worked very closely with Samori over the years, and I do mean many, many years, and especially with his interest in Cuba, is Rosemary Mealy, a longtime BAI person. Rosemary?
Thank you. Thank you, Yuki. Well, you know, he used to call, Delphine said he used to call her Blue.
Mealy?
Yes, Samori, you've got to do this. But I don't think we can, you've got to do that special on Cuba. You've got to do the one, you've got to do an Assata Shakur special. But Samori, you've got to do it, Mealy. That's it. And we did it. And $10,000, $20,000, he was like that. And he was like that with us sisters. You know, we had a lot of struggles on the woman's question. You know, and I've watched, we watched Samori evolve. You know, just like I said earlier today, the only thing that I can say is that I think all of us who gathered here tonight and the listeners who are listening, we have to reaffirm our reason as to why we exist and why we're here. And I think none of us individually will ever fill Samori's gap, but I think collectively we will fill it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The Asia Pacific program that you hear on Wednesday nights from 9 to 10 is represented here as well by Dwahli Si Kau Tao, and a few words from you.
I would like to just say that as my name is Dwahli Si Kau Tao, and I recently became the part-time coordinator for Asia Pacific Forum. I started last summer as an intern here, working with Mario Murillo on his program, Our Americas, and I met Samori for the first time then. He was very excited to see me, an Asian person, represent the community at WBAI. And I've been working with Asia Pacific Forum, the programming, since that time, and now part-time coordinator. My last discussion with Samori was last week when he asked me to come into his office and talk about Asia Pacific heritage and what that was going to mean for the station. I really felt that Samori was a very international person. He really cared about all people of different colors, and including Asians, and that was a big deal because there's just so much need to learn about each other, all of us, and he really took the time to do that. I know that our executive producer, Sybil Wong, would have much more to say about Samori, but just for now, I just want to say that Samori will be missed, and that we will, in remembrance of him, of course, continue our Asia-Pacific programming and our heritage, and represent as much as we can to support the WBAI radio station.
Thank you. Samori was not exactly a genius on the computer, but our next colleague is Dave Burstein, one of the trio that runs the computer show here on WBAI.
I just got to the station, and as you walk through the station, you're seeing people with tears in their eyes, and I don't have much that I can add. I'll just have a very brief one, but I did have something that I could do to let you add your words to what you're hearing. This afternoon, I did something that's easy for me. I put a website up for Samori. In 2 days or so, when the paperwork comes through, it's going to be there at samori.net. And at the moment, I just put it up on one of my sites to get it up. And at the moment, it just says that he's missed. And it asks you and everybody who comes there to give us reminiscences and memorials by email. There's an email there. I'll give the address in a moment. By a disc that you drop off from the station. We could even take something that you typed up and type it in ourselves, but that's a little bit more work. And the site is there to remember Samori. A wonderful thing about the internet is that I can put things up, as I did a few years ago with some obituaries here. They will be there as long as I or anybody else am around to keep them up, so that if you want to say something that matters to you, this is one way, not as powerful as the radio. The radio we have here that we are fighting for, that we care so much about, that everybody is down here, not just because Samori was a wonderful person that we respected, but because the work that he was doing and the work that everybody here does is so important. But this is a small way. So if you can add your thoughts about Samori, pictures or anything, it's up now on one of my sites. It's www.dslprime.com/Samori. That's D as in David, S as in Samori, L as in Larry, prime.com/Samori. As soon as the internet makes it possible, we'll move it over to Samori.net. But I could talk much too long, and you've heard far too much of all our griefs and feelings, because this is enormously profound for all of us who know and care about this place. So the one thing that I wanted to add is something I heard here on BAI, and you wouldn't have heard it many other places, although things like PBS are catching up. When Paul Robeson was so sick that he couldn't go to the concert and the event in his honor in Carnegie Hall, he made a tape talking about how he was going on and how he had not changed. He was still the old Paul. And he ended it speaking, not singing, with the last few verses of Old Man River that everybody, well, I think many of the people out there can hear in Paul Robeson's great and eloquent voice. But he changed the words a little bit. And when he sent those in, he sent the words, "I'll keep on fighting until I'm dying, that Old Man River just keeps rolling along." Samori was not well, but you wouldn't have known it. He had severe problems. He went on fighting. He went on very strongly. He was here leading. He's going to be missed. And I'm sorry I took so long.
Not at all. The first person we see every day, the first person who sees Samori practically every day, is Fred Geobald. Fred.
Well, I don't think anybody knows better than I the constant barrage, the constant stress Samori was under, with people wanting programs, people wanting to comment on programs, people wanting to place guests on programs, and, you know, the calls just kept pouring in on him, and The one thing that memory that I think is going to stay with me is just Hal with just constant, incredible variety of the from the most most serious, the most critical, earth-changing events to the silliest and most trivial. And he kept his patience. He kept the clarity of his vision for this place. He kept his values straight somehow. And I think one of the most important things that made that possible was that if you saw the man, you saw a big, physically imposing man. When you heard him, you heard the deep, resonant, rich voice. And you got the impression of great substance and great seriousness. And then suddenly that surprising looniness would come through. He had a sense of humor that you just didn't expect. No matter how long you knew him, he would come up with something you hadn't expected. He will be with us for quite a while just from the imprint he made on this place. He gave this place a sense of direction that isn't going to go... He's going to be with us for quite a while through this place and a lot of others that he touched.
Thank you, Fred. Speaking of making one laugh, Fred Hershkowitz does it on his program Home Fries. Fred, we're closing in on the 6 o'clock hour, but we wouldn't at all do so without hearing from you, and you've been holding on for a while.
That's very sweet. Can you hear me?
Yes.
You know, if there's a night that we don't have the news on time, this might be the night. I haven't let myself even feel what I'm about to feel, probably 11 or 12 o'clock tonight when I'm alone and everyone's sleeping, because he was a true friend and an amazing man, a brilliant man. I've listened... 3 o'clock, I listened at work, and now I'm at a friend's house in Utrecht. I just wanted to tell you a few things about Samori. I met him first in 1978 at the station, and it was almost like there was a radio in the room. We shared a little room. I did a programming on daycare and then on sports, and Samori just started to do programming on international affairs, and the newspapers were piled up so high on his desk that when he spoke, you couldn't see him. You just heard that beautiful voice, that wonderful stately voice that he had, and during that year, he educated me about the governments of islands in the Caribbean I had never even heard of. I mean, he always had time to speak about what was important to him, and it didn't matter. If you showed an interest in a political movement and a social movement, Samori always had time to speak and to answer questions, and he really educated me in the late 70s. Let's skip forward to 22 years later, just before we moved from our old space on 505 8th Avenue, that all of us really got to know each other. Everyone down at Wall Street really got to know each other at 8th Avenue for those many years. Just before we moved, he had a meeting inside his office in the corner. You remember that corner with the beautiful view. He had about 10 people in there, and my daughter Susanna, who at that point was 7, looked in the door to say hello to him because she knew him, and he recognized her, stopped the meeting, and he got a big quart of strawberries because Samori, after his scare with his high blood pressure and his weight, started to eat really well. In fact, what I'm frightened about is he's been looking well. You know, the last few weeks looked very good. He stopped the meeting, and he went over, and he made sure that Susanna had the biggest and the fattest and juiciest strawberry, you know, in the quart, in this huge quart of strawberries. And that's, I can't not think of both of those memories of him and the 22 years in between. We're not going to let him die. Very few people today spoke about Samori in the past tense, which was eerie and yet very beautiful. As I listened at work between 3 and 5 when I got on the train, Utrecht, almost everybody spoke about him in the present tense. This man will not die, not today, and not what you and other good friends of him will do for him. And we have to continue to have tributes to him and to perhaps set up a fund or an award in his name. There's much to be done. He actually just gave us a tremendous amount of work when he died this morning. We have lots and lots of work to do in his name, and I thank you for this time.
Thank you, Fred. And Barbara Nimri Aziz of the program Tahrir here at WBAI, you have the last word today.
Well, Utrecht, I was reluctant, actually, to come in, but because I usually, of course, have a lot to say, and I'm very sad, and I have that strange hollow feeling that I think many others may have when we lose something so precious and we feel somehow suspended. But I am heartened hearing others talk about Samori's presence, and because I feel it. It gives me a sense of a greater mission here, that he gave us a lot to do, that his vision is so great. And I will say that, and I've thought about this, and when I'm in the Middle East, I tell people about Samori. Actually, I talk about Samori to people I work with in the Middle East because they can't believe a radio station like WBAI exists when they see the kind of work I and others do. And of all the people I know personally, he's the only person with vision that I feel is a real sign of a great leader. He is my leader. I'm not ashamed at all to say this. He is my leader. And he has given me a lot to do, and he'll give me more. His passing is, in a way, sharpening my determination and my commitment. And I think many of us here feel that, and I think we will combine our resources to that. And we were, of course, all together with Samori yesterday here, but I also am so gratified that just a few weeks ago when I came back from Iraq and Turkey, I told Samori, I hadn't done it before, and I just decided to tell him that he can count on me. And I think that leaves me with a very clear sense of what I have to do. And maybe many of those out there, listeners, who did not know Samori personally, will now know him better because we've taken this time. Samori's not a person that I think one takes for granted. We were aware of his vision, his power, his everyday leadership here, and his humor, and his presence. And I hope that our dwelling on this today and in future days, as we try to keep him with us, will help our listeners know really what he means here. And I just want to say something finally, Utrice, and that is that if the tension that he lived and the dream that he was determined to give us to realize was in part perhaps responsible for a heart attack or a stroke that took him away from us, it does show how hard it is to make democracy in this country work. It takes that kind of tension, that daily fight, that daily education of people like me. He is teaching me all the time. That's the cost of fighting for, you know, our little space of democracy in New York and in America.
Thank you very much for those words, Barbara Nimriziz. We'll part company today on this sad note. Tomorrow, Michael G., I know you're overwhelmed. We'll talk with you tomorrow, and I'll talk tomorrow, and others will talk tomorrow who haven't been able to talk today, because really, it has been a devastating thing to have received the news, as I did very early this morning. And we will take our little time to mourn, as we should, because it's important to heal as you go, but it only gives us greater courage and determination to continue doing meaningful work on this very precious station whose image was crafted by this giant of a man. And so, Samori, you are not at all outside of our memory. You never will be. We will talk again about you tomorrow.
And you're tuned to listener-sponsored commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. It's 6 p.m. Please stay tuned for a report of some of the day's events with the WBAI news team.